on Twitter at Believe Network. His handle is at Jeremy M. Evans Esquire, ESQ. Jeremy Evans joins us. Jeremy, much appreciate the time. How's been life been treating you and yours?
No, well, thank you, my friend, and good to hear from you. Good to hear your voice. So, life is good.
That's lovely to hear. So I'm kind of a diehard New York hockey fan, and I'm old. So I vividly remember seeing Wayne Gretzky play as a rookie, and I was intrigued by something you tweeted out, that eBay has partnered with The Great One, a new NFT platform. So if you could kind of put this into layman's terms, because I think when many hear NFT, need a little clarity. What could you tell us about this kind of interesting new undertaking?
So NFTs, I think the easiest way to kind of understand this is that, and I had to do a ton of research on this, by the way, you know, when these things first started coming out, because this is all connected to, you know, blockchain technology, and which I'll get into and essentially what it is NFTs are the digital original of things, meaning that you take something, a picture that you have painted or a picture of, for example, NBA Top Shot, which was pictures of somebody dunking or, you know, taking a shot or stealing a basketball. And then they would essentially put that into a digital image and then sell that image. And now somebody may be thinking, well, I can just Google that image and, you know, and have access to it. But what blockchain technology does is it says, we're going to attach onto that image and secure that there is one person or whoever that owns that particular image. So in many ways, it's in some sense, a way to secure a copyright over something. But that could also be transacted, meaning that you can take that NFT, that digital image of something, and then sell it and exchange it for something. In some ways, it's maybe like the digital images of cryptocurrency in that sense, if you could make that comparison.
Sure.
And which cryptocurrency is also backed by blockchain technology. So that's kind of like the best way to think about it. Or I guess maybe the last example would be, take your traditional trading card by Topps or Duncan or Dunlap or whoever it is that's making it, and then turn that into a digital image and then sell it. So it's kind of, you know, they're kind of, again, taking something that's physical and turning it into digital and then monetizing it.
You know, you also do a weekly column for the California Sports Lawyer. And as somebody who's worked in commercial radio for about 30 years, the last 23 on this show, so something kind of hit home. We know one thing, there's a thirst for quality content, revenue streams. So be it expense, flexibility, what are some of the reasons you cited that podcasts and audio shows are just growing so big in popularity?
Right. No, and I appreciate you bringing that up. And this is such a fascinating thing, because really what's happening in the space is that podcasting is essentially the modern version of radio, if you will. And it's essentially allows somebody to take unlimited content, create it, monetize it. And what Hollywood is picking up on is they're essentially saying, we're going to take all of sort of this content. We're going to create product out of it. You know, we're going to take a radio show, a podcast, and we're going to turn it into a television show, turn it into a film. And I think Hollywood agents and studios are really looking towards that content. And not only that, but then you have talent, you know, traditional A-list talent that's, you know, I guess the comparison would be an actor who goes from Broadway to television to a feature film. Now they're adding a fourth sort of layer to that by saying, why don't you do a podcast? Why don't you do an audio program? And in my mind, what's so beautiful about podcasting and the radio is that I remember, and I still do it today, you know, listening to baseball games on the radio or listening to something on the radio, your imagination runs wild. And that's not something that you necessarily do when you're watching a film or a television show, because you're focused on the content at hand and the visual imagery. But when you're listening to something, it expands that. So the aspect of content with the radio and podcast is just expanding. And of course, from a production standpoint, it's so much easier to produce because you don't have video. Some podcasts do, but generally you don't have video, and it's just, you know, two people talking. There's not generally a script. There might be an outline, which makes it natural. So I think for all those reasons, we're seeing an explosion in that space.
Talking with Jeremy Evans, host of the Believe in Sports Law podcast, Believe Network. As far as the general thought on NIL, name, image, likeness, we know the NCAA and many of the powers that be have fought this tooth and nail for decades. There was no legislation. There's no rules, amounts. So would it be fair to say, of course we landed here with mayhem as this has taken root and pretty much everybody is still trying to figure out exactly what this is?
Yes, and it's really, I mean, I think the common term that I've heard is sort of Wild West.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's funny because on one hand, you've got state law, which is normal. Actually, that's something that from a state-to-state standpoint, we are used to as Americans. We are literally a collection of United States. So in the federal constitution lays out that, you know, the states have more rights than the federal government. That's the way that it was set up and intended. So I don't think that necessarily shocks people, but I think what gets people is that the NCAA, to your point, had not done anything for so many years. And any time in a negotiation, if you've got one side that's making money and the other side that's not, somebody's going to complain. And ultimately, the NCAA could have gotten ahead of this years ago by setting rules to say, you know, essentially what state law just sort of provided, which is you can make money off the field, you can have your own personal endeavors, but, you know, when it comes to on campus, you know, on the field, that sort of stuff, you're regulated by our rules. Of course, they didn't do that, and the result was, you know, 20 different plus states went out and, you know, had NIL laws passed. And now, of course, California is considering a bill in their state legislature that would actually split the revenue that athletic departments bring in California with the student athletes 50%. So the student athletes would get 50% revenue that comes in from athletic departments, mainly from television dollars, but any endorsements or sponsorships. Each student athlete, I think, would get $25,000 per year for every student athlete, no matter the sport. And then if they graduate from that institution, they would get another percentage of money after graduation. So, which, you know, again, that creates a lot more maybe potential issues, but that's the current system that we're in. It's kind of a mess.
I want to get to what we witnessed last week. Nick Saban, who 9 years ago was against up-tempo offenses because they'll cause player injuries until he figured out how it could work for him. Now NIL is evil because Texas A&M bought all their players even though they didn't. So you have a guy making $10 million a year still landing five-star recruits. What did you make of all that kind of back and forth? And I don't know, almost in some ways, Nick Saban looking for pity.
Yeah, and you know, it's really unfortunate because I think that both Saban and Jimbo are they're both right in the sense that there is somewhat of a mess of a system in that, you know, for example, you know, Saban has different rules and regulations in Alabama compared to Fisher in Texas. And so in some sense, there creates a division there about what's right or what's not. Now, the NCAA did provide some guidelines to this. They've been followed up with it. But I think it's harder to regulate something after something happens, meaning that it would have been better to your original point, which is a really valid one, which is NCAA should have came out first, said, here's the rules, then have the schools follow and implement those programs versus schools implementing all these programs, having conversations, creating collectives, doing all these things, and then the NCAA coming in and saying, let's regulate this. So I think Fisher and Saban are really just a, dare I say the word, victim of the circumstance in that they're both doing what they thought was best. I don't necessarily at this point think they did anything illegal. And frankly, I think Saban is, he's a competitive guy. He's probably like, this sucks that we're not the, you know, the top ranked, you know, recruiting class. And so he looks to Fisher and says, I will say this. I think by midseason, all it's going to be is potentially if they play each other this year, all it's going to be is extra fireworks, you know, for folks to talk about.
Yes, circle that one. I think it's the second Saturday in October. Couple final thoughts. Jeremy Evans, who hosts the Believe in Law podcast and the Believe Network. The most recent podcast from earlier this week, you spoke with Scotty Gaffield of Athletes First, a really highly reputable agency. But it was fascinating. You were talking about representing coaches. And as opposed to when you rep a player, it's kind of a singular focus. But with a coach, you might be getting a big raise going from being an assistant to a head coach, family to consider, what happens when they lose their job. So what about that contrast you were discussing? Because I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, you know, and Scotty is such a good guy, very humble, and frankly had a wonderful conversation. You know, that was supposed to be a 20-minute conversation, and it turned it in an hour. You know? And that's the beauty of podcasting, right, and radio, is because you just have a great conversation. But, you know, I think what Scotty and I were talking about is that the difference between coaching and players is that, you know, a coach can last for such a longer period of time. And there's no connection necessarily to his physicality in terms of how he's going to perform in that sense. Now, of course, how he performs in terms of win-loss record is important, and how he performs in terms of his morals and his ethics is important. But it really is a complicated space, and frankly, it's something that within the last maybe, I would say 10 years especially, but 20 years coaching and the coaching salaries and how much folks are getting paid is just grown exponentially, and there's just a lot that goes into it. The sophistication of some of these coaches in terms of what they have to do to be successful, how competitive it is. It's a fascinating space to get into, and I give all the credit for Scotty for getting into it, because it's not an easy one.
You know, the last thing I want to get to, because here we are, it's late May 2022. We know players now incorporate finances and benefits that could come their way beyond the usual concern of playing time or using the university as a springboard to the pros. And I get there's an element of speculation, but be it NCAA creating guidelines, maybe the conferences, how do you see NIL becoming more manageable, or with so many individual cases, it's just going to be year to year, player to player, and it might never really simplify?
Yeah, no, and that's such a good point. And it's an interesting one, because what I really see this going, and what I hope is going to happen, is that the conferences, to your point, take a significant role in how these rules are played out. Because I could see, for example, you already have the Power Five conferences, and those conferences, by nature of how they're collected together as, you know, with a collection of schools and institutions, they already seem to act alike or act very similar. For example, the Big Ten acts a lot like the Pac-12. They're very similar in their leadership. They're very similar in their education requirements. And they were even talking at one point about a super conference. And then you look at that, you compare that to the Big 12 or the ACC or the SEC, which is probably unlike any other conference, and only getting stronger. And I would say I think a lot of the leadership needs to come from there, because the NCAA has deferred to these conferences in many different ways, television dollars, the way they govern themselves, the rules that they have. So I think from the NCAA and from the conferences is where this leadership really needs to come from, because if you look at the history of Congress, they have never passed, very, very seldom have they passed anything that comes to national legislation, particularly in the form of contracts or rights of publicity. And it would probably be litigated for years in terms of how that all played out, because it really does infringe upon state rights. So that's my guess is conferences get into it, NCAA gets into it in terms of regulation.
All right. Well, your guess is as good as anyone at this point. Folks, he's Jeremy Evans. He's the managing attorney at California Sports Lawyer, host of the Believe in Sports Law podcast on the Believe Network. His Twitter feed, a lot of good information and stories at Jeremy M. Evans, ESQ. Hey, Jeremy, great having you on. Fascinating stuff. Hope you and yours are well and safe. Thanks a million. And, of course, look forward to catching up again down the road.
Thank you, my friend. I really appreciate it. You as well.
All right. Take it easy.